You're listening to Big Cast, your source for financial technology innovation with John Best.
Welcome everyone to part two of the GAC rundown, and this is the Big Cast. My name is John Best. I am the CEO of Best Innovation Group. We like to do great and cool things for the FI industry, and you can find me at Big Fintech Media on Twitter. You can find bigfintechmedia.com. And with me for part two of this glorious piece here is Glenn Sarvati of 154 Advisors. Hey, Glenn.
Good morning, John.
Yeah, and Glenn's our senior payments expert here at Big, and he's also his own consultant for doing a lot of things. He's an amazing person to work with, and really enjoyed hanging out with you for a few days down in Washington, D.C. at the Government Affairs Conference. And for those of you that didn't hear part one of this, this is part two of us going through some interviews and some things that happened at the Government Affairs Conference. And we've got a few more interviews to share, but just a quick brief recap of what the Government Affairs Conference is. Ready, Glenn? Go.
Well, the Government Affairs Conference takes place annually in Washington, D.C. for a very good reason, in that CUNA brings together, this year it was actually over 5,000 credit union executives, board members, et cetera, to learn the latest in terms of content, education, and then for the last day and a half or so to hike the hill, breaking up into their individual state groups and their credit union associations and whatnot, meeting with their elected representatives to make sure that they understand the needs and the importance of the credit union movement. So it was a great combination. Also, some wonderful keynote speakers. If you go back and listen to part one, we talked about some really great presentations from General Colin Powell, Kat Cole, who is the CEO or was the CEO of Cinnabon. She's now president of the holding company for a series of portfolio companies, including Cinnabon, and Derek Kayango, who started the Global Soap Project, which is a really interesting and inspiring story as well. A great couple of days of wonderful content that was both banking and credit union specific, but more broadly into that whole mission of people helping people and community involvement overall.
So one thing we didn't talk about in the last episode that I was blown away by, my God, that conference hall was amazing, was it not?
Oh, I mean, yeah, and they do a good job the way they've got it laid out, much more so than a lot of other conferences I've been to, because they get a lot of activity in the actual exhibit hall. And then they also have a wonderful, you know, exercise of keeping people engaged at the actual sessions.
Yeah.
General as opposed to the breakouts. And they balance the two quite nicely.
Well, you know, I walked in. And first thing you do is to the right, and this is from a previous episode, MasterCard has like part of a tractor trailer truck in there, you know, with a robot that they apparently are beating once an hour or something like that, which you have to go back and listen to the last episode about that. And then right in front of you is Symitar, which we have an interview for, which we'll talk about in just a minute, with a whole bunch of cool stuff. And then there was this giant, did you see what CU Direct had, Tony Patel and his group?
I saw they had a very large presence. I'm trying to recall.
Do you remember the old movie Tron?
Yeah.
You remember the big giant kind of, they look like a staple sort of, you know, that would run around and get you. What were the name of those things? It was in Tron. It was a Tron enemy. Let me look it up here. It was, God, I want to know what the name of it was,
because it's funny. I just saw the movie without the sound, because there's a burger joint here called Grindhouse. There's a couple of here in Atlanta, and the theme is, you know, it's ground meat, but they also are kind of an old Grindhouse kind of movie theater, and they show old science fiction movies, which tells me how old I am, because Tron is considered an old science
fiction
movie. They project it on the wall without sound, and it can be pretty hilarious when you're watching it that way.
Wow. I've got a picture of it right here, so I'll save this so people can see it, but they're not telling me what the name of it was, but anyways, it's this giant, like, it looks like an arch almost, but they had something. I mean, the roof on this thing has got to be, I don't know how high it is, and their thing almost was, it was the tallest thing in the place, was it not? Anyways,
it was monolithic. Yeah,
I had a great dinner with Diana Dykstra of the California Credit Union League, who was wonderful to talk to. I'm hoping to get her on the show. I'm actually meeting with her later this week, and Tony Patel, You know, Diana was originally involved at Golden One, and I got to hear the whole story of how CU Direct was born and the Cuddle product, and it was amazing. So it was, you know, I guess my point about this conference is there's so much more that goes on even outside the walls of the conference. It's just a really well-attended event, and there's always amazing people to kind of, get to talk to, and everybody's sort of stepping up their game there. But one of the things I really did like was when you walked right in, the first booth you ran into was Scimitar. And I'm proud to say that Scimitar is one of our partners. I'll probably talk to it about after this interview, but why don't you set up the interview and then we'll run the interview and I'll talk a little bit about our partnership and what we're doing.
Sure. So I spoke with Ted Bilkey, the president of Scimitar, and he gave me a couple of interesting perspectives, and I'll come back to that after the interview as well, so I don't steal any thunder. But I mean, their whole idea here in terms of they were really trying to present their vision of where they're moving. Some of the stuff is in market today. Everything is very close. Some of it's coming out a little bit later this year. But the whole notion is, as we've been seeing for some time, the whole notion of the branch of the future, untethering the client service representative, or the teller, if you want to call them that, making them more of a true client service rep, so they don't have to be stuck behind a workstation, so that they can actually be enabled to work by roving the floor, working off a tablet, working off an app. So, that's a lot of what their latest generation of solutions, and also without making someone learn everything from scratch and make it very a logical extension of the solutions that people are familiar with today. So with that in mind, let's let Ted put it in his own words.
All right. Here's Ted Bilkey, president of Scimitar.
Glenn Sarvati here at CUNA's GAC conference with Ted Bilkey, president of Scimitar. Thanks for taking the time, Ted.
Hey, Glenn. Thanks for coming by the booth. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so I had a chance to kind of take a look at what you're showing, and I would say the common theme that I'm noticing is the ability to untether the teller from their workstation. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. What we're seeing is more and more credit unions adopting a cafe style or a boutique style branch with staff with just a couple of people, sometimes with cash, sometimes cashless. But what they're really looking for is to get away from the traditional teller lines, get the employees out, engaged with the members in more of an interactive style. So with that is a requirement for new ways to interact.
I'm thinking about the Apple Store model, the Nordstrom Rack model, where you don't have to go to a specific appointed station to transact. You've got people just wandering around helping you where you need to be helped.
Absolutely, and I really think that comes on two fronts. It comes first from the members' expectations, but also from the employees' expectations, because we've kind of got a new generation, coming into the ranks of our both the staff of the credit union as well as the members, where they've grown up with iPhones and they've grown up with iPads and they want to swipe. They don't want to use a mouse.
Yeah.
And they want things to be more interactive and intuitive. So what we're really driving towards is to take the power of the desktop, of years of functionality captured in the system, and take that across devices that let the employee get out from behind the teller line and interact directly with the employee. So taking functions out to a tablet or to an iPad or potentially all the way down to an iPhone, we've done that with mobile apps for employees, with members, but we haven't done that with employees. So giving the employees the not just the same capabilities as you can get through mobile, where we've enabled it with card features, and you can turn cards on and off. We've got to enable that through devices with the employees as well.
That's a really interesting point, because all the innovation's really been focused on the end user, but really providing the enabler at the times when you actually are looking for the service experience for them to be able to function in that same environment.
Absolutely, and we're starting to see more and more apps that are a blend both for the member and the employee.
Okay.
So you're starting to see things like, from our perspective, we have SimApp, which is the account opening and loan origination product that we just rolled out this year. And it is tablet-based, it's desktop-based, it's mobile-based. You can use all the above, either from a member or from the, in-branch experience. So, it's the same application, maybe with some additional features in the branch for the employee, but generally the same capabilities that you're going to find in the branch.
I'm going to let this overhead and we can cut this out. Okay, I think that's good. Train of thought back here. What I understand, I saw the one example of the Apple Watch. You've got that in market today, so if a teller needs an override or something like that, they don't have to wait and make a call for somebody else to come to their station, correct?
Absolutely. So traditionally, if a supervisor needed to do an override, they had to physically have access to a desktop device, either their office or they had to log into the teller's tellering system or into their desktop and execute the override. So what we wanted to demonstrate is kind of the full breadth of being able to do an override across a variety of devices and enable it through responsive design. So now a supervisor can walk over, they can look at whatever they need to look at, talk to the teller, make their decision on whether to override or not, and they can do that override as they traditionally have, or they can do it on a tablet if they have a tablet or an iPad or an iPhone or an Android, all the way down to what we believe is kind of the furthest extension, which is the Apple Watch, which is a simple approve or decline off of the Apple Watch, but makes it very easy and efficient.
So the key word, interoperability, right?
Absolutely. And it's also, you know, once you move to the iPhone or an Android and the Apple Watch, you're actually untethered from the branch because now you're on the cellular network, mm-hmm. and you don't have to physically be in the location at all.
Good point.
So a manager can be, they can be at lunch, they can be at an offsite meeting. You can send them a message requesting an approval, and they can simply, you know, either use the iPhone or they can use the watch and do an approve or a decline.
The branch doesn't grind to a halt because one person's out of the building.
Or more importantly, delay in getting a conclusion to the member of approved or declined. You don't have to get back to them. People want immediate gratification. Everything you can do to speed delivery of that is really what everybody's trying to do.
And then a more souped-up version of this that I believe is going to be in market third quarter this year on the tablet, correct?
That's correct. So the tablet, even more functionality, taking it down to a tablet level, so the things you've traditionally been bound on the desktop, you can now take to a tablet. You can serve people, you know, on a payday Friday, if you've got people lined up in a traditional line, you want to pull people out of the line and be able to do simple transactions with a couple of people with tablets and really eliminate those Friday payday lines by employing all the staff for both cash and non-cash transactions and tie it into your dispensers and recyclers. That's all going to be available as we move into the second half of calendar 17.
Now I'm getting back to thinking about the best demonstrator practice customer experiences. I'm picturing the Chick-fil-A, the long drive-through line, and all of a sudden they just deputize a couple folks with iPads and go out there and start getting those orders in before people can roll up to the window.
Absolutely. It's, think about even at the Starbucks model where, you order your coffee, on the way to Starbucks and all you have to do is pick it up and it's already paid for.
Right.
So being able to do those types of things, really are what we hear our customers telling us and we think has got a lot of value, including time, the fintech technologies in that are really enablement. So a couple of partnerships we've done recently that I think are high value for our customers. We partnered with Big Best Innovation
Group. I didn't pay him to do this, by the way.
With Best Innovation Group for their Amazon Echo solution, as well as, we're anxious for them to get their Google Home application done, which really plays in as another self-service channel, similar to IVR, but not quite, similar to home banking, but not quite. And then there's...
Yeah, to prove that wasn't a setup, give me another partnership.
Okay, well, and another partnership, that we're excited about is Appointment 365, which is a very simple application, but it allows from either a mobile phone, from a desktop, or calling the branch to be able to schedule an appointment and have it both go on someone at the credit union's Outlook calendar, as well as the member's calendar as well, to schedule an appointment for whatever the specific activity type is that you're looking for.
I was just having that conversation last night, how interoperability just kind of keeps marching forward. And if you were using different calendars a few years ago, good luck trying to get it set up. And now you can actually accomplish
that. And that's a good point. You've been able to do some of these things for a while, but making them simple and easy you know, again, it comes back to the experience. How do we just make it part of the process, you know, and a very easy thing to do?
My understanding is the tablet application is going to be kind of the 80-20 rule. I mean, most of the things that you can do with the teller, but obviously you're not going to gum it up with every, you know, arcane process that might be.
Exactly. So most of the functions available at the teller line will be available on a tablet, but things that are typically done in the back office, payroll processing, ACH processing, balancing share drafts, those types of back office
functions. Best left for the back office.
And best left on a large screen desktop.
Yeah.
Not on a tablet, not on an iPhone. Although some of the approvals specific to those things may take advantage of some of the new capabilities. You know, but keeping the back office functions on, you know, on the right device.
Great. I think it's great. This is another example of kind of getting a glimpse into the future. I mean, we hear all about the best demonstrator practices quite a bit. The, you know, the Capital One Cafe moving in this direction. Umpqua Bank is always mentioned. Yep. So this enables credit unions across the board to really kind of take that same approach.
Yeah, the next generation, you know, that we're starting to look at that is, to me, very exciting is once you've enabled all of these things, you know, as you start to apply artificial intelligence to this information you've collected on the experiences and to be able to anticipate what people want to do before they actually select it so that you can be prepared for the transaction that they may or may not choose. But being able to bring that learning logic is going to get very interesting over the next couple of years.
Agreed. Well, Ted Bilkey, thanks for taking the time. Enjoyed talking to you and enjoyed the show.
Appreciate it, Glenn.
Thanks.
And we're back. Let me start here. Ted is a class act. I really enjoy talking to Ted. He's very pragmatic, and I really think he gets it. I think his vision is pretty good. You know, some of these things I had the opportunity to talk to them about ahead of time. I spoke last year at the SEC. I met with Ron Kaplan and some of the other folks in their group that are working on the innovation. It's nice to see that in less than a year's time, they've brought it to market. I mean, the Apple Watch piece, which I have some pictures of, the tablet, and the idea that, I posted a Twitter yesterday or a tweet. God, I sound so old. I posted on the Facebooks and the interwebs with the with the Snapbook and the Face Chat, you know. If you really want to have some fun with your kids, just go up to them and go, hey, will you be my Face Chat friend? That really just, like, if you can find like a 14-year-old, my niece just freaks out. I'm all the time going, I saw you on the Snapbook, and it just creeps her out. But
my wife, the joke around here is we finally got it fixed, but the Wi-Fi would keep going out here, and her thing, and she was totally serious. We need another internet. We need another internet.
She's right. You do need another internet. We all need another internet. It's called Internet 2, friends. Check it out at DARPA. Google it. You'll see what I'm talking about. But anyway, so I tweeted out a link from the Financial Brand that talks about branches. And, you know, I was trying to post the old, the old saying, reports of my demise were, you know, reports of the branch
exaggerated.
Yeah. Reports of the branch's demise are greatly exaggerated. That's the term. That's not quite what I posted because I didn't have you around to help me wordsmith it. But that's what, you know, that's where I was. And so the branch, I'm not one of these people that believes that the branch needs to go away. The branch needs to evolve some. It needs to be a little more of a sales tool, and it really needs to highlight the wonderful people that work for the credit union. And I love the idea of being able to take that tablet app that they were showing and sit down next to someone and go over their finances. It's very imposing to have someone across a desk from you, you know. In HR, they teach you, and I don't know if you've ever been through this, but one of the things that I was taught in all my years of HR was that when you do reviews and things, don't sit on that side of the desk. Go sit around next to them if you have two chairs, you know. Try to get, you know, don't put this barrier between you and everyone else. And I think really that's what they're doing is sort of lean back member relationship is what I'll call it. Ooh, I just made a new term. We need to tweet that out. Lean back membership. It's like lean back computing, but it's lean back member relations. That's what we'll call it.
Where's that song, Lean Back? We can we get Laura to pull that in, or, you know, get a graphic of Sheryl Sandberg for Lean In or something.
Yeah, Lean In is really actually Lean In is a better way to put it because you are leaning into their finances and their world and trying to bring them together. And I think that's what Ted's doing. And I'm proud to be part of his innovation. We weren't set up when he filmed, but as you know, and we've talked about, we are right now, we've finished what we call our five platform. And our five platform stands for Financial Interactive Voice Exchange. And what it does is it enables Alexa to work with Scimitar. And we have completed that. You can go and talk to your local Scimitar rep. They'll give you a demo. And if you're interested and want to come through me, my salespeople will talk to you about it as well. You can go out to big5iot.com. You can also just go to Big Fintech Media. There's a place there. Or you can hit me on Twitter at JBFintech. And if you want to ask Glenn about it and you're afraid of me, you can go to at 154 Advisors. But enough about that. There's plenty of information. But I was going to talk to you. You have a piece coming up on Visions, who took Alexa and put it into their branch.
I was about to say, and by the time this, given that this is part two, by the time this post, let's make sure we add a link to it. Had a great conversation with Cynthia Schroeder over there, and you know, she told us a lot about. And again, it was something that she picked up from going to the AXFI conference last year, and said she'll be there again this coming June in Minneapolis. And yeah, it did some really interesting things with what they're calling the Echo Chamber.
It's so cool. We have pictures of it. It's so slick what they did inside their branches.
So yeah, and she told a really good story about how that came to be. And, you know, it's a little bit different than the full five approach, but a little bit, you know, that what they were comfortable with doing, and they're going to work from that stage forward. And I thought it was a great story of innovation on a grassroots level.
Yeah. She's one of our partners in Big's Innovation Club. Which is a club we keep that we all work on innovations together. And so she was, we don't talk about it much online because it's but there is actually a spot or two open right now. So if you're a credit union, you're interested. Now, one of the keys is you have to have developers. You have to have people who can actually code and program. That's kind of what we do, is we make things. And so a lot of fun. And she is definitely one of the pillars of our innovation club. And so I'm excited to see that when it comes out. So
let me, before we go off the entirely off Ted Bilkey, let me just mention a couple more things. And I'm not speaking.
Yeah. Cause he told you some things. You had some good quotes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I asked him, cause this was after we finished the conversation. We were just kind of talking off the cuff, and I asked him, do you want me to, you know, not quote you on this? He goes, no, it's fine. A couple things. Well, you were mentioning that, you know, the branch is certainly far from dead. And I thought one of the interesting points he made is that with all this talk, and one of the solutions they showed is, you know, if your branch manager is not available for an override, you know, you don't have to shut down operations. With some of these new mobile solutions, you can get the necessary approval without the person literally being on site. You know, so, you know, one way you could think about that is a logical extension. And some of the talk has been moving all the customer service reps to some kind of a central location where you can, you know, both get greater efficiencies, save money on real estate, whatever. He said his thought was, no, that's proven so far to be a bridge too far. People are not looking to move the CSRs out of the branch. People want, when they've decided to come to a branch, they've done that for a reason. They actually want a human interaction. So that is not the idea of what they're going after here. It's nice to be able to create that extra latitude for the walking around and getting out from behind the desk, as you say, but it's not to get rid of the human interaction entirely. If anything, it's to improve the human interaction. The other thing that he said that I thought was interesting was, you know, the whole notion of collaboration and partnering, just like the example of partnering between Scimitar and Big is, you know, his comment was, you know, fintechs are kind of, people expect them to fail. They're supposed to be aggressive, and people are not surprised if projects that fintechs take on don't always pan out. He says that's not the case with core processors. Nobody expects a core processor to fail. So that's one of the reasons he thinks the partnership is a great approach, to work with places so they don't run that
because
risk.
Because they'll fail?
And they can just throw
and
you
people
overboard.
Expect me
that's
to fail?
Right.
This is horrible. You didn't tell me that.
But the interesting thing, and I've made that comment a couple other places talking to people, is, you know, you could argue, I'm not sure that everybody wants to take this approach depending on your appetite for risk, but there's an argument to be made that if you don't fail occasionally at what you're working on, you may not be pushing the envelope enough.
Oh, I could not agree more. As a matter of fact, one of the things I like to talk about in when I speak is what I call, it's actually something Kyle Marklin pointed out to me from when we were working together and he was at Beth Page, is, and now I notice it so often. Somebody has a good idea, we get in a room, and then we start engineering all the risk out of the good idea. Instead of a good idea, let's call it an innovative idea. And so you've got an innovative idea, you get in the room, and they start engineering all the risk out of it. And you know what a innovation is devoid of risk? It's not innovative anymore. there has to be a certain amount of risk. And I get it that I'm not saying that, you know, you want to, you know, be on the 5 o'clock news type risk, but we're even down to innovating, you know, out of, you know, it always comes down to, well, but we have people that will never, you know, they're too old to use a phone or whatever. And there's all these myths. As a matter of fact, I'm doing a speech at the marketing conference coming up, and I was just talking to a group who's sponsoring it yesterday, and we were talking about that very thing. And the idea is, and I don't want to give it too much away, but I'm doing 5 simple things you could do at your credit union to impact your business today. And we were talking about a couple of these things. They're a little risky. There's not enormous risk, but we the other piece that we do, and I know Ted talks about this too, is we tend to want to try to go to the 100% and the greatest common denominator to get something done. And that's just an impossible goal. So, you know, those two things are continuous. And I do believe you have to fail. I can actually carry around a jug. You've seen me carrying it that says it's from Apollo 13, which is failure is not an option. And I've X'd out the not, and it just says failure is an option. And so that's going to be probably the title of one of my presentations this year on innovation. So let's talk about this. So I want to talk about your payments panel a little bit. I want to talk about CU Ledger. And I know we have a great interview with the always amazing. And by the way, he was at that dinner that night that I had with Battelle and Dykstra, Rudy Pereira from Royal, just a fantastic dinner. He was sitting next to me, and I love Bill Hampel.
Me
Occasionally,
too.
Occasionally me and Bill, we butt heads, but it's because, you know, he's just real. He's a real person. He gets it. He's got a lot of good points, all great stuff. He also listens. He's not someone whose mind can't be changed about things. I just love the guy. So I want to get to that interview. But let's talk first about you on the payments panel. I missed it. They had me somewhere else again. I can't even remember where. But I was doing the CU broadcast.
I think you were getting wired for CU Ledger. I know as soon as I left that, by the time I finished my panel up, you were talking CU Ledger and in the next session.
You're right. So tell me about what happened on the payments panel. I did not get to catch up with you on this, so I'm completely in the dark as anyone else.
I was gratified. I mean, we had a standing room only crowd, and this was with multiple sessions going on at the same time. And I'm told the other ones were very well attended as well, which says that unlike a lot of times when you get to the breakout, it means a whole bunch of people break away and don't wind up going to anything. It sounds like they were all very well attended. I was kind of the outlier on the panel. There were 4 of us. Everybody else represented kind of Washington, per se, was much more kind of plugged into the policy and the legislative side of things from the Financial Services Roundtable, from the Electronic Transaction Association, folks along those lines, thinking about things that were much more around the policymaking approach, whereas my role on the panel was to speak more about what that meant, you know, when the rubber hits the road with the credit unions actually performing in front of the customer on Main Street. And we had a great conversation. I think, you know, it's another one of those kind of nice problems to have, is we wound up only covering about probably 30-40% of what we wanted to cover because there was just so much to talk about. We spent a lot of time, not surprisingly, on Durbin and cybersecurity, probably the 2 places that we spent the most energy, because those are kind of top of mind issues. And, data access as well. And I know we've had a lot of conversations before around PSD2, the Payment Services Directive, which is the way, data is being shared kind of more collaboratively on a level playing field in Europe. And that does not apply in the U.S., but clearly I think we're moving in a direction where something very much like that is going to wind up becoming, whether legally or just implicitly, kind of the rules of the road before too long. So those were the broad conversations. We talked a lot, like I say, from a Washington perspective, which was the right thing to be doing, given that the audience was largely going to be hiking the hill over the course of the next day or two. But it was a good conversation on a lot of those topics, you know, that old conversation about, the retailers versus the banks around interchange. And what that means about Durbin and who holds all the cards. And again, going back to the interview in part 1 of this this podcast around Richard Gose and the conversation there. One of the points he made is you can't let the banks have the opportunities to set the agenda in a vacuum.
Well, so it's getting our voice out there is key. Strategic high ground, right, to have that. And,
exactly.
And that's,
exactly.
You know, I think that was the message I had heard from Bill anyways, was we've got to make sure that we don't give up strategic high ground, you know. Battles are lost that way. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Sounds like it was good. I know I got great reviews on you representing Big, and I thank you so much for that. I was getting ready for the CU Ledger piece, and I just thought it was just great to have you in there. I'm just sad I missed it, but I can always find out from you afterwards, which is wonderful, so I don't have to be at everything.
And right after that, after talking to people at the end of the session, I wandered in, and you were heads down already with a nice audience that was obviously very interested in what was going on with CU Ledger. So can you tell a little bit about that?
And how yeah, that yeah. So we had a CU Ledger breakout, and it was a little last minute, so I was surprised at the number of people that showed up. And the purpose of
it was kind of a well-kept secret. You had to kind of have the special code to get. I mean, yeah. It wasn't intentionally that way, but because it wasn't in the program, the fact that so many people found it.
Oh, I was surprised. I had lots of people reach out to me on Twitter. I posted it on Twitter. And yeah, I was surprised. The room wasn't, I mean, it was a huge room. It wasn't standing room only or anything. I'm not Glenn Sarvati, but
it was an unlisted number.
Yeah. But it was good to have a lot of folks there, a lot of good questions. And basically, Rudy got up and talked about kind of the future. We're headed towards the CEO roundtable in May, where we're going to present several proof of concepts, one of which will be a call center verification concept. So if you're tired of spending all that time trying to I don't know if you've ever called into a call center, Glenn, but like they ask you, hey, what's the last three things you spent on your card? I don't know, my wife shares this card, she could be spending right now for all I know.
Literally just before we started recording this, I was just on the phone, and it was actually one of the better experiences, but yeah, I think I wound up with four different, validating questions I had to answer.
Yeah.
Oh, you want that information too. Now you have another question.
Right. Yeah. So, and I don't know how we're going to give them blood over the phone, but so one of the things we've talked about is using the blockchain as a cure for this. And there's going to be some details coming out shortly. We're going to post, I'm going to start posting some stuff in the blog out there on CU Ledger just so people can see the progress. But we're headed towards the CEO roundtable in May. We've had some meetings about creating an entity because the proof of concepts have gone so well. The second proof of concept that we talked about is a loan participation proof of concept. And we've talked about that on this show before, that there's a tremendous need to match credit unions that have a lot of liquidity with credit unions who have a need to or an overload of loans in certain geographic areas. So that could be just a huge lift for the entire for the entire credit union industry. And it's just so tailor-made as a use case for the CU Ledger platform. And then the last one was talking about a threat index registry. And that was kind of related to the call center a little bit, where, hey, you know what? We could start keeping track of the numbers, the phone numbers that the bad guys call from, and we could pass those around. And organizations could track that and other information that I don't want to release. But those sorts of things, we could do something called shared signaling. And there's a good article out there on this. I'll post it on the show notes. And then I did a demo of the platform, which people seemed like they really liked. I don't know if you were in there for that.
People were definitely, I mean, it got a little bit above my pay grade pretty quickly from a technical standpoint, but the folks that understood what you were doing were heads down and very engaged.
Yeah. And so after that, that was really super exciting. And I also announced at that point, we had two nodes, live nodes up on our CU Ledger blockchain network. I can now announce that we have three. And so there are three nodes up and running. I'm thinking by May, we should have about 10 or 12 out there that are functioning. Now, keep in mind, these aren't connected to live systems or anything, but we're getting into trials. So that's going to be the next piece, is do some trials on this. So, and Bill Hample spoke about it. He sat next to me and, talked a little bit about what was going on. I explained blockchain with using my visuals. I don't know if you saw that. I think you probably got there a little late.
That's when I walked in. You were in the middle of that with the human visuals. Yes.
Yes. I have a cool way of showing it. And I got to give Peter Nolte from Royal credit for that. It's a visual way of explaining blockchain that really resonates with everyone. But I thought it was a great meeting. If you're interested, go to CUledger.com. If you want to sign up, there's still room for folks to get involved. We are on a good track for May on delivering a final analysis of this to the CEO roundtable, and I'm super excited about it. It really has gone better than I ever expected, and it's because of the great people, including you, that I work with. And speaking of that, great people that I work with, and I mentioned him before, Bill, who's been super involved in this, Bill Hample from the beginning. And that was a great example of where Bill and I had some great discussions. And at first he told me, I don't know, John, this seems like a bridge too far. But once he understood it, you know, and that's what I love about him is he seeks first to understand and then be understood. And but my understanding is you were able to track Bill down.
Yeah, I mean, he does every year he does a session on the economic outlook, both more broadly about the economy in general and then what it means for credit unions. And he's got a great team. He doesn't do this all by himself. He had a panel of four, including one individual from outside of CUNA. And they had great information to share that, just kind of put things in great perspective, but also was very specific to the credit union space as well. You know, listen, in particular, I thought this one was fascinating, and it can kind of help explain maybe why credit unions get some of this pushback. You know, when we talk about the credit union difference and the credit union advantage, they've documented quantifiable savings of $10 billion to consumers right now on an annual basis because of credit unions, between higher yields, lower fees, lower loan rates. And that, according to Bill, is the largest it's been since the financial crisis. And then there's another piece that's not quite as hard quantifiable, but it's clearly, you know, well documented, of non-member benefits, which I interpret as basically keeping the market honest. That, you know, pricing that would probably be less advantageous to other non-credit union members if there weren't a credit union alternative out there, which might help explain why banks might be trying to push back.
Well, let's hear from Bill.
Glenn Cervata here at CUNA with Bill Hample, Chief Policy Officer from CUNA. And always one of my favorite sessions here is the economic outlook, which we just went through for the second time. I guess you did it twice this time because it tends to be so well attended. And for the most part, a very happy picture, I would say. I mean, people are feeling pretty good about the outlook right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, the economy has been growing for about 8 years now. It's been doing really well, except it was growing very slowly. We're finally getting up close to full employment. But the other thing is that undeniably, since the election, there has been a bump in consumer confidence, people feeling much better about the economy. So the economy really hasn't gotten any better in the last two or three months, but people's perception about it. This was a really long, slow, dragged out recovery, and it's finally gotten to the point where most people feel pretty good about it.
One of the things we talked about at the end of the session, too, is, you know, there's a belief that we're finally getting to the point where interest rates, both the Fed funds rate and the Treasury rates, are going to return to something more, you know, long-term normal, although it's been pretty long-term that they've been subnormal. Right. But that also implies that this recovery still has some room to go.
Yes, it does. If the Fed's able to raise interest rates, it means that they expect the economy to keep growing. If not, they would be raising interest rates.
That's
you know, inflation is finally beginning to pick up a little bit. You know, this sounds weird, but for the past several years, the Fed has been worried about being inflation too low.
Right.
Inflation being too low, and the issue there is if inflation gets so low as to be negative, if prices start falling, that's a downward spiral.
Right.
If you expect prices to be of everything lower 6 months from now than now, wait 6 months to buy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they're worried about that. But inflation is now getting back up to around 2%, which means the Fed can start raising interest rates. And the good thing about that is that when all interest rates were compressed at almost nothing, it was pretty hard to get interest, net interest income or interest margin from one rate compared to the other when they're all close to zero. As rates start rising again, we are likely to see more of a gap between what we have to pay on shares and deposits and what we can earn on loans and investments. So net interest income will finally be coming back for credit unions.
And we were talking about this as well. I mean, it's almost been, I guess you'd say, the lost decade, because you know, I've been expecting that recovery to happen for many, many years, and it just never seems to turn the corner. But it does feel like this time it really is going to happen, which obviously, from a net interest margin standpoint, is a pretty big impact and a positive impact for the P&L.
But you know, there's sort of a weird sort of diversification in the retail financial institution business model. And I don't think this was planned. It just sort of evolved. And that is, over the last several years, a really significant source of bottom line for credit union has been revenue from mortgage lending, mortgage originations, gain on sale of making and selling loans. And so the same thing over the last several years that depressed net interest margin was stimulating mortgage refinances.
Okay.
And therefore, the net interest income was partly being replaced, but this was tended to be for larger credit unions, was replaced by revenue from mortgage originations. Now, rising interest rates are going to choke off the mortgage refi business. And therefore, that revenue source will be contracting at the same time that net interest margin is rising.
So it's the one-time bump of those events. It's kind of a natural smoothing effect between the two.
So it's nice to have diversification in a portfolio works when they're uncorrelated, when they go in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
So that actually helped credit unions.
We were also talking before a little bit about small business lending, and it's interesting because I know that that's been a challenge in the overall economy for some time. Small business creation and small business lending has been in the doldrums. But as you explained, that's not necessarily been the case in the credit unions.
No, not for the recession itself, the financial crisis almost 10 years ago now, hit banks harder than credit unions. And that's basically because going into the financial crisis, credit unions had lower risk portfolios, balance sheets.
Yeah.
And that's not because they're smarter or because they have better economists, although we think they do. It's more because as cooperatives, they tend to be more conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And so credit unions, the effects on credit unions of the financial crisis, although severe, were not nearly as bad as it was for commercial banks. Banking regulators basically told them to pull in the reins on their small business lending because they were taking additional losses. We didn't have that risk, and therefore we were able to take on more business loans. So after the first hit of the crisis, the fastest, when consumer lending just basically dried up, not because we weren't willing to lend, but consumers were too afraid to borrow.
Mm-hmm.
Small business lending was the fastest growing component of the credit union loan portfolio for several years in a row. Admittedly from a small base,
yeah,
but it was still our fastest growing portfolio. And we were making up in a small way for the contraction of credit supply from traditional lenders, you know, commercial banks and other lenders.
Obviously, we all want small businesses to succeed, so that's a service to the marketplace overall.
And you know, again, there's a limit to what credit unions can do there because of the business lending cap. And
mm-hmm.
we've actually made this point to Congress several times. Look, credit unions can be a counter-cyclical force so that when other lenders can't lend, we can. But if you have this arbitrary 12.25% cap, we're not going to be able to do that.
Now, you mentioned already that inflation's been below where the Fed has wanted for some time. We clearly see, along with interest rates, that inflation's likely to be going up. And again, that's not necessarily a bad thing from a credit union standpoint, from a financial standing, correct?
No, and also in where we expect inflation to be for the next 5 to 10 years is in the range of 2 to 2.5%, which is about the Goldilocks version. It's about right where you want it. Much less than that, you worry about deflation. Much more than that, oops, you've got wealth transfers because of fixed income and all those sorts of things.
Right.
So it looks like we're sort of settled into about 2 to 2.5%. It won't be steady, you know. Inflation will run above that for a few months in a row or a half a year or a year and then below that for a while. But it looks like the sort of the baked into the cake likely inflation rate for the next several years is about 2 to 2.5%, which is a rate that, if especially if it's fairly stable there, we can all get used to and operate under pretty well.
Mm-hmm. The one other thing I'd never seen before that I thought was really interesting, your colleague Mike Schenck showed at the presentation, was the economic benefit generated by credit unions, both to members, which I believe is about $10 billion.
Right.
And then the one that I really thought was interesting was $3.8 billion to non-members. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, there are two ways. First of all, the nine to $10 billion to members is the fact that credit unions, by charging lower loan rates, paying higher dividend rates, and charging fewer or lower fees, we calculate using third-party data on those fees and prices that if all credit union members had done last year the business they did with credit unions with banks instead,
mm-hmm.
it would have cost them an extra $9 billion.
Wow.
But the other thing is that bank customers also benefited because the existence of credit unions as a strong competition to the banks, we believe, moderates their pricing behavior. And this is also based on third-party and academic
mm-hmm.
research. And so we're estimating, based on that research, that bank customers, by paying slightly lower loan rates than we would if credit unions didn't exist, by banks paying slightly higher deposit rates than they would have had credit unions not existed, that bank customers saved about almost $4 billion in the process.
I think that one probably gets lost in the shuffle quite a bit. Admittedly, it's probably not quite as crisp a number, but having said that, it's still a meaningful, I think, a message that's important to keep in mind.
It is a number we present to policymakers when they talk about changing the tax structure of credit unions.
Which I just talked about a bit with Rich Ghost, so that'll be on this as well. Always a pleasure, Bill. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you, Glenn.
Love your insights. Thanks.
And we're back. One thing that's interesting to me about this is, and this is really fascinating to me. So you talk about how, you know, we've quantified these billions that we were able to save, and it's the most ever. But what's interesting is we're still flatline on, on our percentage of the market that we own, right?
So yeah, it's interesting. There was a couple other things he talked about. We had, and I think this is, one of those kind of fun with numbers things. It's a positive message.
It is, because now you're helping more of the people you already have to some extent.
But,
right?
But I'm also, the other point that he made was the credit union member growth is running 3-4% each of the last 3 years. And population growth is only 0.8%. So from that standpoint, membership is actually improving, which I think runs counter to a lot of the messaging out there. Now, I'm going to be the contrarian on this one and say that's all fine and good, but what's really important is how many of those consumers are treating the credit union as their primary banking relationship. Well, and I think that's where the rubber really hits the road.
Right. And then there's, one of the things that we're finding a lot in the co-ops as we go through and do digital strategies for credit unions, is that whole 80-20 rule where 20% are very engaged and that 20% are carrying the other 80 who are less engaged, maybe came in through an indirect channel or something like that. And as a result, but it sounds like people are starting to make a dent in that to some extent if we're seeing the rise in savings and as Bill mentioned, the money to the consumers or to the current membership has growing. So if we're providing more savings, then it's just right back to Jim Nussle's message, which is, that steak's not going to sell itself, right? you gotta get out there. And I'll tell you something, this is an old saying, but I learned it a long time ago. You don't sell the steak. You know what you sell, Glenn?
The sizzle.
The sizzle. That's right. And so speaking of
real quickly, the thing that kind of ties back to CU Ledger as well, and a point that you made is, I forget if this was actually something that Bill mentioned in our segment or not, but loan growth, another positive message around the credit union space for the last 3 years has been running at 10% plus overall in credit unions. But that's not equally distributed. And it tends to be that the greatest loan growth has been at the largest credit unions. But again, to your point, if there's a solution that can be driven by something like CU Ledger that can help, create a market clearing mechanism where the folks who have an excess of deposits can help participate in the places with an excess demand for loans, that's a pretty powerful message.
That's exactly what I'm out to do, man. That's where I'm at.
And the one more thing that did not come up that he mentioned off mic, and we can send a link to this. It gets too complicated to try to explain. But the corporate stabilization program, which was something that, again, came out of the financial crisis when it was never as big an issue for credit unions as it was, but it was more the corporate credit unions that got hurt. And there was an additional assessment against credit unions that was used to shore up those institutions. Those have wound up, as has been the case with a lot of the other resolutions on failed banks, wound up not costing as much as originally expected. So credit unions are actually, here's a nice piece of good news, are they in line to actually receive a rebate on some of those assessments that were made back a few years ago.
Oh,
it's a little bit more complicated than that. We'll send a link that you can actually follow through some of the details if you're interested. The timing is not 100% clear. Some of it may be during this calendar year. That's not certain. And there may be reasons why we want to actually defer some of that. But again, I will leave a link if you want to find out more about it or just contact us. We can explain it if we are able. And if not, we'll point you back to Bill.
Yeah, we know where to find it. That's for sure. So let's talk about some upcoming things. So we not too long ago, we had the wonderful Janie Stepp on our show, and she gave all of our listeners a promo code for her upcoming conference, which I believe you're going to, right, Glenn?
I will be there. It's the latter part of April. I think I want to say the 23rd or 24th down in Austin, Texas. Double checking. Yeah, it starts on Monday the 24th.
And what was our promo code? Do you remember?
We'll have to put it in the notes. I cannot remember. Maybe
it in the notes. Or Laura will pop right in right here magically and say it. Ready? 1, 2, 3, Laura.
10% off with promo code BIGCAST.
Okay, so that's what it is. I love the magic of post-production, don't you, Glenn? And so, but anyways, that's coming up. And then she's also going to be a speaker at our AXFI conference.
She Jan, not Laura.
Although not Laura. Laura will be there. Laura's singing in our band. Too. Laura's gonna, yeah. And you're going to get to hear our band. Laura's going to be singing in our band. But yeah, so Laura will be there as well. But we will be working on AXFI conference coming up in June 11th through the 14th in the magnificent hotel we were in last year, which is a Hyatt over by the Mall of America, which if you've never been is very cool. It's a beautiful time of year to be in Minnesota. There's also some things to go see around there. You're nearby the train. You can get to a lot of places. And I'm super excited about it. We have Jana as a speaker. We have a whole lot of other people as speakers. And there's a lot going on. You can check it out at axficonference.com. It'll be in our show notes. We hope to see you there. And that is where we were talking about earlier, Cynthia, and our upcoming article on her echo chamber inside Branches. That's where she got the idea from. We had, as you remember, Glenn, and you sat next to her when you did your coding, we had, what, almost 80 people in there that learned to code on Alexa with Paul Kutzinger from Amazon that year. And this year we're planning something like that, another hands-on piece that's going to be very, very cool. We'll be forthcoming in that soon. But yeah, you definitely want to go to AXFI conference, check out the speakers that are there. We've got Neff Hudson from USAA, Eric Berlow from TED Talks talking about simplifying complex systems, John Janklius, CEO of Partners Cranium. That's a cranium for Disney. He's involved in a lot of things that go on over there. Just, it's going to be a really good year. So, and actually we only have, I hate to say this, and I know it sounds like being a salesman, I call it plaid suiting, but there are only 300 spots and they are going fast. So, because we only had enough for that, I think we're going to have to increase the size of it next year. So if you want to get in, go out and jump in now before they fill up, because I'm surprised, but it is going quick.
Order so Glenn, by midnight tonight.
Yeah. Glenn, you get to come in for free. We're going to have you there this year. We're not going to make you pay, at least not double like we did last year. So,
and I was going to say, don't be scared off. I mean, the way John just described it, it is not coding heavy by any stretch.
No,
of the imagination. The vast majority of it is not. And even that one session, which was more of kind of a heads down kind of hackathon-y kind of thing. Listen, if they could teach me to code, they can teach anybody to code.
And you did it. You finished one. I thought you did a fantastic job.
I'm still not sure how I did, but I did. Yeah,
and I didn't help you once. I don't remember ever sitting next to you or anything. I remember, or my team. I felt like you just got through it on your own. So, it was a great day, and it was just good to spend the time with Amazon and hear from him what they're thinking. And we may have some more details on that coming up. I'm hoping to get Paul back on the show to talk more about what the future is. There's been all kinds of rumors coming out. So I'm going to try to drag Paul Kutzinger back here from Amazon and see what's going on. And I have an announcement that's really cool. In June, Brett King will be back with us. And Glenn, I'm going to invite you to join that one with me.
Great.
So that's what we got. Brett King, of course, of Breaking Banks. So shout out to him. If you're not listening to the Breaking Banks podcast, you should be. He just had a recent really good one on. So go check him out. And thank you to everyone that listens. We're thankful for that. And check us out on bigfintechmedia.com. You can tweet me at JBFintech, and you can tweet Glenn at 154Advisors. Glenn, talk to you soon, buddy.
See ya.
Got a question or want to join the conversation? We'd love to hear from you. Tweet us at BigFintech. Email us at info@big-fintech.com or visit our show notes and comments at www.bigfintechmedia.com.